With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It takes years to build a business that sustains a family and is worth passing on. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work closely with clients to provide the financing, cash management, and deposit products necessary to grow a business. So your life's work will continue to prosper once it's in someone else's hands. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your business. Visit sandyspringbank.com/business. Credit products offered by Sandy Spring Bank.
Did you know this podcast is powered by Acast? Acast is the home of podcasting. For creators looking for freedom to grow their listeners and make money too. And creative brands looking for smart ways to advertise. Podcasters and advertisers in the know Acast. It's time you did too. Visit Acast.com to find out more. Acast, for the stories.
Hello and welcome to Wolves Fancast. Matt Guy here, joined by Stu, Pricey and Gully. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Some dour faces to match the rain at the Hawthorns this evening. But as always, we are here to talk about the Wolves fixture this evening, the 1-1 draw with our arch rivals, West Bromwich Albion, in a game where we gave them the nail in the coffin, you might say, a small nail, but a nail in the coffin for their Premier League survival. Talking about the game, as we always will, some actual lineup news to actually talk about for a change, because it wasn't the same usual Nuno show. Some enforced changes. What did you think? First of all, Gully, what did you think when you saw the lineup?
Well, it was interesting. Which is the case in itself, you know, and it isn't always the case that that it is a talking point, like you say. And it was, I think, open to interpretation as well, once you saw the names, how you thought they would actually end up being fielded, because there was talk of it being a 4-2-3-1, talk of it being a back five shape with Ndonka dropping back in, you know, Owen Ottosawi being the bit of the wild card, I guess. You know, we all seem to think that he's a central midfielder based on the way he's played for the 23s and whatnot. But Nuno obviously had other ideas. And it was nice to see the names on the team sheet that we did, I think, because we've all called for the likes of Fabio to get their start, Vitinha in particular as well, and Ottosawi in some quarters. So while it might have been enforced, I think we stumbled upon quite a nice-looking team, to be honest.
I'd agree there. Price, in terms of Silva starting over William Jose, in terms of, you know, got his goal and he's off the mark, but he brings Silva in. Why has he done that, do you think? And do you think it was the right decision? Obviously, he gets the goal with a massive bit of fortune, but we'll get onto that later. Do you think it was the right call, or were you surprised by it?
Oh, and what a goal it was as well, eh? Definitely the right call for me. I've never been the fan of William Jose, to be honest. I don't think many people are. I don't think that's a unique viewpoint for me there or anything like that. But I think Silva's our guy, and he is our guy long term. So I know it was probably the right call early in the season to take him out of the team. But, you know, Jose is not really offered too much since his time in the team. So I think the time was right to put him back in the team and to stick with him now as well. He's just got more drive about him than William Jose does. You could see as the game went on, and certainly after his goal today, that he's got a bit more confidence about him in everything that he does. Not even in his own build-up play as well. He's already got a handful of goals now this season, based upon, you know, him being in the team. So I'm looking forward to what he could do next year, although, you know, his role might be the same again when Raul gets fit again. But I think we all can agree that it's the right call for him to be in the team. I think we are seeing him come on now as well. So it's positive news for us, really.
Mm-hmm. And Stu, I mean, the only thing that's more likely than you pulling a hammy when you play football is the usual lineup, as you would attest to. What did you think when you saw the lineup? Was it something that you think would be refreshing?
We were very harsh comments there. Like Gully said, we've stumbled onto something which we've been asking for months, if not for longer. Vitinha's been shown more than enough in the little glimpses of what we've seen in a Wolves shirt and then under 21 games for Portugal that he's more than capable of playing with better players. And when you've got Dendonca pissing about and not doing much, Neves not doing much all season, same with Vitinha, it's a scandal, really, that he's not added many minutes before today. Mm-hmm. So, however you got to the decision of playing him, wonderful. He's played, and look at the performance he's put in. Mm-hmm. So, if that's not a, well, fuck you, Nuno, to him, then I don't know what else is. Because, I mean, and we said it before, and we said, well, this could be, like, Dan kind of mentioned it in the group, saying, yeah, he's damned if he does, damned if he don't, but he's brought that on himself by not playing these people. And like Pricey said, there with Silva, there's now no need to play William Jose ever again because Silva's played 90. He's played 90 minutes from the start, and look at the performance he's put in. Yeah, it's against the second worst team in the league, admittedly, but you've got to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he held himself more than against physical opposition like Bartley and stuff like that. So I don't want to see him again. I think that there's players in that team tonight, well, this evening, whatever it was, that should stay there now for the rest of the season for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially with Vitinha as well. Like we saw him in like Portugal under 21s or under 23s or whatever. And I know, Stu, you've watched it probably most of any of us here, but the bits I've seen of him, he looks like a different player when he's playing for Velvet. Granted, you know, he gets his 5 minutes a game normally with Wolves, but then you see him play for like his national team, the age bracket, and you're thinking, well, hang on a minute. He actually looks quite an exciting player here. What's he not showing? What's he not doing in training for Nuno to never pick him or to never start him? And like today, as we've seen, he's actually quite an exciting prospect. Whether or not it's enough now between now and the end of the season for us to keep him next year, I don't know. But for me, as I said, I think he's got the shirt now for the rest of the season. It'll be that last four games of what's left of it. But, you know, we should be seeing what he can do now for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. Moving on to then the start of the game, really. Hammered it down in Albury and Samwell all day. I was there working, so I know how bad that the rain was outside there. And it made for a horrible playing surface to begin with. Gully, you've played, you know, Sunday League, and how bad would it have been for those players that, like, you know, we want to play with zip, and we did for a majority of the first half, less said about the second, but the rain came down even more. It wasn't really set up for silky football, was it?
No, I mean, everybody would tell you that you need a bit of slick on the surface to zip the ball about, but the one condition that, you know, nobody wants to play in is windy conditions, and you could see that the ball was swirling around. I mean, I guess if a team is going to take advantage of that kind of thing, it's going to be West Brom under Sam Allardyce. And the few occasions that they put the ball into the box early on, you could see there was a bit of hesitancy around where it was going to drop. I actually thought, to be fair, Patricio did all right, claiming balls aerially and stuff, given the conditions that we were playing under. But for the first hour of the game, I'd say we managed it pretty well. Then, you know, the heavens really opened, didn't they? And then, you know, it almost became too detrimental to both teams, in the sense that nobody seemed to be able to put a pass together. And there was some really poor moments in the final third, and probably a lot to do with, like you say, the absolute downpour that we suffered from.
Mm, definitely. Well, looking at the first half and the kind of game plan, it was really evident that we were happy holding on to the ball and frustrating Albion. You know, as much take the derby factor away from this, they needed the win far, far more than we did. Again, before we get pelters, taking the derby element out of it. So it's clear we wanted to frustrate them. It's clear that we wanted to allow them to, you know, they were pressing, counter them if needs be. Did you think, Price, that it was only going to be a matter of time before we would score and shut up one of the biggest cliches against Wolves that we don't score in the first half? Did you think it was a matter of time before we would score as we were building pressure, or were you not as hopeful?
I thought we were like, well, let's face it, compared to the Burnley game, it was like chalk and cheese, wasn't it? But I thought we were solid, if like unspectacular. It's decent first half from us. I never thought, I know we clocked up about, what, 10 or 11 chances. But none of them, I thought, you know, were too overly clear cut. So for me, I was thinking, it's, you know, it's an improvement against Burnley. It's an improvement from what we've seen certainly on recent times on this formation plays that we fell upon. And the goal itself had an element of fortune about it, albeit though that was a well worked goal that we did score and a good passage of play. But honestly, if I'm honestly speaking, I never thought that we should have been like a couple of goals up by half time. I thought that it was an improvement, solid, but that was about it really. I couldn't really say that we should have been a few goals up.
Stu, what are your thoughts on the chances we created in the first half? I mean, we had a couple of really gilt-edged ones. My recurrent Semedo anytime goal-scoring bet almost came in. I probably would have about broke even at this point in the season. But what do you think about our chances in the first half?
They always fall on his left foot, don't they, every single time. And to be fair to him, he always gets a bit of power behind them. They're almost too well hit in a way. But they're always down the keeper's throat. And like Price said, that it's almost like every time we play with four at the back, yeah, we create shitloads of chances and it looks good on paper, but none of them are like, yeah, should have scored. And it was better, obviously. But again, we were so wasteful against the 19th team in the league. When, I mean, Sace headers from corners and set pieces, and just there'd be times in the past where you'd be burying them. And you think, well, just come on, just concentrate a bit more. But going in a half-time 0-0 was just what I expected to happen, because that's what happens, because it's Wolves. So to get an actual bit of good fortune, which if William Jose was there, wouldn't have happened, because we wouldn't have been there for one. But it was rightly deserved at half-time for me. I mean, I thought we bossed possession. We just, it was very much a case of an established Premier League team against someone who's going down next week in terms of possession and actually moving the ball around. Because other than crossing into the box, that didn't really trouble us for me. And I never really felt in any kind of danger, which is a kind of strange feeling after the last few weeks.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I want to talk about the American idol, Otisawi, for a second. A really strange game for him. I think he played well. I'll preface what I'm about to say, that he ran the channels. He looked really comfortable when under pressure, when he had about two or three men around him. But he'd give away possession with an errant pass when under zero pressure. Is that nerves? Is that match sharpness? What is that? Do you think it was just a case of the occasion? I don't know. Talk me through it.
I think he's been...
I quite liked what I saw, if I'm being honest, from Isaiah. I think he looks like the kind of player who, he's got all the attributes, but nobody really knows what he should be doing on the pitch, so to speak, in the sense that, and we've seen that from Nuno, where he's played in a number of different positions now. You know, they spoke about it on during the game. He came through as a centre-half. He's played in midfield for the 23s. He's playing up front on his full debut against Burnley, and now he's playing out on the right-hand side today. So it's almost as if people are still trying to figure him out as a player, but they can see the talent and they can see the potential. What I liked from him was that he does take the ball under pressure, and he's able to wriggle out of some really he's got really good feet for a big lad, and able to wriggle out of some tight situations. And to be honest, if that's not his natural position, you know, and he's not, you know, necessarily grown up playing, you know, as a flying right winger through the year groups and whatever, he's done made a decent fist of it, I think, today.
Well, he's
that's a detriment though to him, Gulli, though. Do you think that's a detriment, or do you think that's not going to be great for Otisseri that he's had been in so many positions so far? Because a player can't go on in that vein, can he? Always moving from position to position between players, can he?
Yeah.
We need to find what works best for him, don't we?
I think there's a Nuno thing here, which is his lack of trust in footballers in general. I think, and we've seen that with the way that he sets his teams up. They're always defence first, and it's always about protection. And Otisawi should be playing through the middle of the pitch, I think, driving, you know, with the ball, getting away from players and stuff. But with that comes a risk of losing it. And I don't think Nuno can get the idea of him losing the ball in the centre of the park and us suddenly being on the, you know, being broken against out of his head, because that's just the way that he is. He's almost protecting Otisawi from those mistakes by putting him out on the flank and it not being such a dangerous position for him to do all of his flicks, tricks, whatever. Maybe.
I think it probably comes down to as well that he didn't start playing football till pretty late. From what we've heard. I mean, everyone else is through the academies and they're all schooled from the age of 9 to not piss about in the middle. Whereas he's a bit rough and ready, the whole model thing, which is now the new Kilman futsal reference. And I think it's got a bit of that too. It's a bit like Maitland Niles for them. He's not really settled in a position. He's been played everywhere for Arsenal, and now he's playing in midfield, and that's why he went to Albion in the first place, to play midfield. And maybe that's it. It's just going to take a few years. It's going to take time for him to settle. And now he's best position for himself, but he's definitely got something about him, 100%.
I think we're all glad to just... I think a lot of us were glad just to see him given the chance, weren't we? Because, again, he's one of those I've been crying out for, because the same old of Moutinho, Neves in the middle. You know, we've been there, done that. I've got the T-shirt, haven't we? You know, we know that doesn't really work anymore. And I mean, God, even Donk plus one in the middle wasn't really seeming to work in the middle. So it was like, let's just try something different for a change. Let's get Otisseri in there. Let's see what he can do. But I mean, granted, you know, he wasn't in the middle. He was out on the wise. Like you guys, I quite like what I saw from him. Great play for the goal as well from him as well.
Yeah,
they're good driving forward. So I'd like to see more of him. Hopefully, Nuno agrees.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't think I mentioned this at the start of the episode. International author and writer extraordinaire Gulli wrote a piece earlier in the week around another starlet in the team today, Ait Nouri. What did you make of Ait Nouri during this game? Obviously, he looked up for it today. He really, really attacked, and you know, commentary made that remark as well. And you know, he wasn't really tested too much in his defensive duty, so he had the free rein to attack. What did you make of his performance?
I think in the last month he's kind of earned himself a deal, I think, to be honest. You compare him to what he was like at the start of the season defensively, he's just matured massively. Mm-hmm. And he was the best of an incredibly awful bad bunch last week, and I thought today he was solid. Again, solid defensively, but going forward, he's more of a threat than Vinagre ever was, especially in the Premier League.
I really liked his performance today. I thought it was great. Mainly from, like, we saw how good he can be offensively, because, like, as you say, he was allowed to do that today, because, you know, what work he had to do defensively was, you know, a bit mitigated considering who he was up against. But it's funny, actually, you mentioned about, like, earning the deal. I think, like, the way it's going, they'll earn a deal by default, even because, like, Johnny's bossed again, and Marcel is permanently being paper mache'd back together again. So the way it's going, I think it'll be default. He's got himself a deal. But yeah, like today, I really liked him. I mean, I know he went on a few amazing runs. He's putting in good crosses, really attacking their fullbacks. I think we saw, like, that really good side of his game today. And correct me if I'm wrong, was it the price? Was it 20 million we pay for him? Or have I overshot
18.
That? 18. Okay, there we go.
That's up for negotiation though as well. So hopefully we can have a word on that.
Well, hopefully Jeff's got his negotiating hat on. He pulls some out of the bag. I think based on that this performance, if you can keep sort of this performance up, I would say it's a no brainer really to sign him, given that's going to be a position of need come the summer.
I think, to be fair, I mean, it's credit to Allardyce, not that we really want to give him too much credit. That change that they made in the first half, you know, it really had a big influence on Ait Nouri and Semedo in particular, not getting into the final third and making stuff happen, because they were looking threatening from a goal perspective. You know, they're actually offering more of a threat than you'd say, you know, Traore did today. And they were really getting lots of joy. I mean, we'll get on to Adama, I'm sure. But, you know, Ait Nouri, like we say, he is all we've got in that position at the moment. So how can you not sign him? You know, he's had a season to bed in with the club. He'll understand the system and the way we work a lot better. And, you know, all things point towards, you know, Nuno still being at the helm, I think, at the start of next season. So, you know, it's a bit of a no-brainer for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's talk about the goal. First of all, some lovely footwork from Silva to just get the ball away. I know he has a fantastic bit of fortune. And was it that Henri kept calling it an Inzaghi goal? I've never heard that term ever. So that's news to me, that one. But, you know, I doubt it, but it would be great if it just became the thing where, you know, I think it's Vardy always scores against the Albion, and now we have Fabio Silva doing it if we ever play them again in recent memory. It'd just be fantastic if that was the case. But, you know, it's great for him to get a goal under his belt on his start, played the full 90 minutes as well. The lad is showing promise in a season that we would never expect him to play as much game time. It can only be a positive going forward for him. But what did you make of him in today's game, Pricey?
As we said before, you know, he gets a nod over William Jose any day of the week now. I think, again, his general play is an improvement on not just his earlier performance in the season, but also up against his competition, which is William Jose. So, he was getting quite confident. I think he was after the goal he scored. You know, I remember him picking up the ball, running at their defence, getting the shot away that forced Johnston to a save. I think we'll just see more of the confidence coming from him. Hopefully, you know, for the rest of the season, he'll probably start, or hopefully he'll start the remaining games we've got. Hopefully, we'll see that confidence just grow and grow, and then with the summer off, when he comes back next season, you know, again, depending on what his role is in the team, we expect to see more again from him next season. I don't doubt for 1 minute, you know, the common consensus amongst Wolves fans at the minute is that he's got to be starting. I'll go back to what I said earlier. Earlier in the season, I think the common consensus that he was right to take him out of the team because he wasn't having the effect that he's now having on teams. I think that just comes with, you know, the constant learning off others, constantly improving his play. Yeah, I mean, hopefully we just get to see more of the same, more improvement going on with him.
Mm-hmm. Stu?
I love the kid, he's great. He's, I mean, for all the stick that we gave him, and it was never really stick, was it? It was always a kind of, we all knew that he shouldn't be there, and it's not
his pity.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault that he was playing, but the only reason that William Jose had to play before was so he could, I mean, I said it on air, put him on to be beat up for 70 minutes and then throw Silva on for 20. But now Silva's giving it out and he's getting stuck in and he's bulked up massively in the space of, I mean, it took Neto a year and it took this kid, what, 8 months? I mean, I'll jokingly put a tweet out in the week, I mean, before the blackout, before we get onto that, that it could be like Bull and Keane next year, Raul and Silva, and who knows, it could be Master and Apprentice, because he's definitely, I mean, he's never, the 35 million thing is going to haunt him forever until he's a superstar, but he's still only 18 years old. So to be doing what he was doing in a derby game against a Sam Allardyce led defence, superb tonight. Mm-hmm. Superb.
Gully, talk me through the goal itself. What did you make of the build-up play? Massive bit of fortune, but that happens in football. So what did you make of the goal itself?
Oh yeah, I was just going to say this podcast is dedicated to Vitinha's little back heel in the build up to the goal. So shout out to my man Vitinha. What a player he is, by the way. Honestly,
well, we're going to get onto him, but yeah, I'm going to want to highlight him in as much detail as possible. But talk me through the goal.
Yeah, like you say, I think we mentioned with Otisawi picking up the ball down the flank, and normally in that position, it's probably Adama who tries to get down the line, get a cross in. But we actually look to play inside a lot more today, and there's a lot more combination between all those players. And I think someone like Vitinha is the reason that happens, because he shows for the ball, and you need players around him for it to work. And you had Semedo running into the box for that goal as well. Nice little flick towards Silva. And he's just got that knack, you know. Mm. You can't buy with Silva. You just can't. This weird, you know. He always manages to get a shot away. You know, even if there's three or four bodies between him and the goal, you know, he forced another decent save out of Johnston, I think, in the second half. And you can't teach that. You can't, you know, just, you know, instill that in a player, you know, who you've picked up off a shelf. This is why he's going to go on to become a brilliant goal scorer, I think, because whatever happens, he's involved in the game. Even if he's missing chances, he's always there to actually miss them. Mm-hmm. And there's so much that you can say for him that you can't say for someone like William Jose, which, you know, sorry, William, but, you know, this is what you're there to do. And Silva's got us, you know, a result today and could have got...
You know, you mentioned that about Inak. That probably explains why... Like, he scored so many goals at his youth level, because he just seems to have that knack, doesn't he? You know, probably when he first come, we were like, well, how's this kid scored so many goals at his level? And you think, no, you probably can't see, because he has that instinct or he knows kind of where to be.
We're probably doing him a disservice by calling it a knack. There's intelligent movement involved in all of it as well. You know, it's really well thought out. His runs that he makes are very, very good. And the fact that he is always making runs as well is another thing, because you can't say that for some of the more statuesque strikers that we've had in the past. He's always looking to try and get in behind and get on the end of chances, and that's a defender's nightmare. If I'm playing against a striker who's constantly trying to run off my shoulder, it's an absolute pain in the arse. You just don't want it.
Well, Gully, I know you want to talk about it, so let's talk Vitinha. I mean, the performance tonight makes you understand why people want him to be the natural successor to Moutinho. It was an outstanding performance this evening from the lad, and he makes you question why or what about his training or anything else makes Nuno not play him in the first place. Gully, talk me through his performance this evening and what you enjoyed about it so much.
Honestly, I really think today was like the marker that he's laid down that, you know, he's going to be a serious, serious footballer. I know he started games earlier in the season. I think there was one game against Brighton where he kind of got a little bit lost and didn't really put a marker down during that game. But today, just he's one of those players that makes everybody else around him better. And that's ultimately what you should be looking to do as a footballer. You've got to be greater than the sum of your parts. You can't be an individual. Someone like Traore, you know, for all of his individual qualities, they're very individual. He's not a combination player. But Vitinha, you know, in tight spaces, you know, I think someone gave a foul away and the referee blew his whistle. And just as he blew his whistle, Vitinha put the nutmegs on one of the Albion players, and it was just absolute filth. And I just wish he'd played on, because he would have been in a decent position. I think the other thing that's worth pointing out here, Porto didn't even give him his debut before he joined Wolves. Mm-hmm. You know, he hasn't actually had much professional football experience at all. So to think that this is his benchmark where he's starting from, and the more he plays, he's only going to get better. You know, we've got a real exciting player on our hands, really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Stu, what are your thoughts on his performance this evening?
Just echo what Gully says. I mean, he was outstanding, and it's going on two youth games that everyone saw, because it was against England, and England and the 21s are not very good. But he played like Moutinho in them games, and he played in central midfield rather than being more advanced like he did today. And it's blatantly obvious that that's where he could play. He could play anywhere he wanted to. He's that good. But I think that's going to be the thing. If he's still going to be here next season, I mean, we know this. Will he trust him to play next to Neves. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could ask the question, should Neves even be in the team? I mean, I know he's come back from illness and stuff, but I mean, come on. But would Nuno trust Vitinha in a midfield too? And I think he would. I think that's only going to, the only problem it's going to be. So we're going to have to play 4-2-3-1 for Vitinha to play for me next season. That's the only reason I can see him not playing, mm-hmm. because he's that's that good.
Fair enough. Price, have the final say on Vitinha.
Yeah, I mean, kind of just obviously with the guys here, you do question why now? Why has it took so long for him to see what he can do? Obviously, Nuno's just gone with the established order for most of the season. Neves, Moutinho, Dendonk in the middle. Yeah, the formation just playing to his hands. I don't think he would play Vitinha in like a two in the middle. It has to be part of the attacking three behind Fabio Silva, basically. But again, yeah, today just showing exactly why he needs to play for the last four games. And then we should be looking to, based on today's performance, we should be looking to sign him. I know we're only judging it off like one game, but the performance was there today to show that if you can keep that up, it's a no-brainer, really. I think we should be looking to sign him. I know it's a bit harsh to judge him, you know, based upon, you know, the little 5 minutes he gets here and there, or an FA Cup game against Chorley or what have you, but shown today, showing you can see the skills and attributes he's got. You can see what he brings to the team. Let's see it again for last four games of the season, and then let's hopefully we just see more of the same into next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's the positives out of the way. Thank Christ for that, so we can dig into the second half. No, I'm only joking. Right, so we do need to talk about the goal we conceded, however, and it seems to be the curse of not being able to, A, have Bolly as a tall, positional player. Leaving a man unmarked in the box should be a crime punishable by stoning outside the man on the horse, in my book. Thierry Henry made a really good point about how Saïss's positioning was abysmal for the goal. It's just time and time again, we get caught out with the same thing over and over, it seems like, at the moment. Is the answer as cutthroat as it is, we just don't play Saïss in that position? And if, unfortunately, that means he probably doesn't get anywhere near the squad going forward if we can get a centre-back in the transfer window?
I think Saïss wanted the only problem. There was Semedo being right next to Cody for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Cody not telling Semedo to be where he's supposed to have been. And then the ball comes in and Saïss is nowhere to be seen. I mean, all three of them are culpable for me. But I think it's the natural thing to, I said it a couple of weeks ago, that I fully expect, I mean, I'd be willing to give Cody a go with, if we get a top centre-half in, just to see how he'd do. Just being, like we said about Vitinha making players around him better. If you got a centre-half who's superb next to you, then you can kind of, you up your game, don't you? It's a kind of natural thing to do, so I think Saïss's days are numbered from this season anyway. He's a squad player for next season for me. I mean, he has to be. We can't kick off in August with Saïss in anywhere near the starting lineup. No sentimentality anymore. We got a half of this team, their days are numbered. It's just the way it's football. And you have to move on. But yeah, just shocking defending again. And that game was kind of summed our season up in a way for me.
I've defended him before, to be honest, quite a lot, Saïss, but I think there's been a bit of a drop off. I'm just never confident when like crosses come into the box, you know, that certainly from like an Allardyce team where there'll be lots of them, but I just thought I could see it coming in a way, because I always felt a bit pensive when those crosses come, because I thought, you know what's going to come eventually. I certainly without Bolly being there. So yeah, I think I'd agree. You know, I think the goal was a bit of a shocker. Very basic, very, very basic. Social distant defending, really, wasn't it? Essentially, nowhere to be seen against the attacker. But I think it is probably a bit of evidence or a bit more weight to the argument to say that is an area where we can't just carry on getting by, so to speak, with our midfielders turned defenders. We need to go and get out there and go and get an established high quality centre half to improve us in that area, because I think we need it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give him a little bit of credit, because that cross was unbelievable. I really do think that. He couldn't have put it more on Diagne's head than he did. But it also didn't necessarily need to be that level of perfection of a cross to probably end up with a goal, because, exactly, like you say, Zeiss was called ball watching on that one. I think it does come back to the point where with the back four, your fullbacks are starting narrower, you know, positionally. And Semedo is going to find it more difficult to get out and stop the crosses if you've got an overlapping fullback like they had in that situation. With about five, you know, Semedo could probably stop that cross because his starting position is so much closer to the guy crossing the ball. The other thing that could have happened is Ait Nouri spots the danger a little bit, comes in, tucks in a little bit more towards Diagne, and at least has a challenge on him. But yeah, when you're defending those kind of situations, so it is playing percentages sometimes, and the percentages are Connor Townsend does not put that ball in the box. Do you know what I mean? You're not expecting Connor Townsend to find, you know, Diagne in that space in the box, because you don't believe he'll do it. And the most important thing at the end of the day is first contact on the ball. You know, you could be stood right next to your man, but if he still beats you to the ball, you know, that's, you know, you're still marking him. Positionally, you're still okay, but ultimately, he's still got his head on it, hasn't he? So there's a couple of things there. But then, like you say, you know, we're still talking about Cody and Sace as our centre-half partnership. That should never be the case 3 years into our Premier League kind of stay. So
no.
It's first priority for me, especially if we are going to persist with the back four. And I think on the evidence of today's performance, I think people are going to be much more behind the idea of us going this way.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we got wins four by Burnley and a back five last week, so yeah. We might as well just go for it now. There's no point being we've been sensible for, I know we'll come on to it later, but we've been sensible for 3 years nearly. Yeah. And all this about Nuno wanted a back four. No, he played in it back four because Cody had COVID. That's the only reason this was tried halfway through a season.
Yeah.
And so it was not the plan, but obviously it's been tinkered with ever since.
But Nuno knows that those guys needed protecting, and that's why we played with about five.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we play with the two sitting midfielders in front of, you know, the three defenders that we've had, because as individuals, you can't go out and play, you know, expansive with them, you know, ask them to start running into corners because they've been exposed one-on-one. They're not capable of it. And it's in its own way, it's Nuno's genius that we've got to the stage we have got to with those guys in our back three in many ways. You know, he's still eked out as much as he can out of the players that we've got. Now we've obviously reached that point of no return where we need to upgrade, and that's just a fact. But going back to the back four, the players look like they enjoyed it themselves, I think, today. You know, they enjoyed having more of the ball. They enjoyed having options ahead of them and finding players and finding passes and stuff. So they're probably all for it as well.
I tweeted earlier, and I've got an overriding concern going into next season. I think let's say that Fosun give Nuno or the recruitment team a war chest, and we bring in fantastic centre-half. We bring in a striker. Let's say Raul doesn't reach the heights he has, or he has a delay, or there's an injury to Silva or something. We bring a striker. We revamp the team. By having a manager that isn't proactive enough to see a game out, or isn't his game management just isn't good enough, does it matter how good the squad will be if we can't see a game out, no matter how good that squad is? So let's say we get to this game. The 11's picked, the subs are picked, right? Injuries, fine. So the squad might not be good enough, but you have 90 minutes to manage a game out, or to manage that game. And it's quite obvious Sam Allardyce did, Nuno didn't. That's got to be a concern going forward, because, yeah, we've done some amazing things in the last couple of seasons, but that's a ceiling, and there's a glass ceiling there that's not going to get smashed until he changes things.
Matt, surely. You say that, but did Sam Allardyce get the result he wanted from today?
he didn't get the result he wanted from today, but you would argue that their squad and everything about them, they're 19th in the league for a reason. But without the changes he made, they'd have lost the game.
Probably, but who was the better team today overall, over 90 minutes?
Wolves were the better team over 90 minutes, but that was in spite of Nuno, not because of Nuno.
Do you think? I'm not putting today on Nuno, personally. I think we got into enough good attacking positions, yeah, to have done more with what we did. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately, you know...
I think we were set up fantastically. I have no problems with that at all. But when Sam Allardyce makes a change so early on, what have we changed for the better for the remaining 60 minutes of the game with what we had, who the table doesn't lie, we're higher up in the table than them. We've got these amazing players that we've just waxed lyrical about their performances for the last half an hour. What have we done any differently to make that game any better? And I know the surface, we've talked about the surface, we've talked about things like that, but they had chances as well. They were unlucky not to score and score more. I think I've got a genuine worry about just his game management.
I think second half, though, we started the second half like we started the second half at Brighton away. We absolutely battered them.
We gave away a penalty within the first minute.
You know what I mean.
Maybe not that.
You know what I mean. I was thinking that as soon as I was saying it, but you know what I mean. It was even after it was back to one in that game. There's a one goal deficit again in that game. We didn't push on. We kind of, it was the natural Nuno thing to kind of don't go too mad. And I know what Matt's saying because it's what I've said for a year, and I know I've made my point very clear on this issue, and I don't think he's ever going to get any better, to be honest. But the subs that he made, and obviously it was almost monsoon season by that point, so it's all irrelevant anyway, but the subs that Nuno made compared to what happened afterwards? Nothing changed. He took Osasewi off when he was playing well. Why did he take Vitinha off of Gibbs White? Even though Gibbs White did play well, to be fair to him, for a change.
Yeah.
And then Supermax came on and was solid as ever. But nothing really changed, did it? You know what I mean? It's nothing.
The king.
Yeah.
He's just on the wagon now.
I'd be more interested to see now. Cody and King Max in a back two, just to see what happens, then Sace again.
I think we have, though, haven't we? We have seen it, I'm sure.
Clean sheets galore, I assume. Yeah.
I can't remember, to be honest, but I thought it's happened.
I don't think you left it in the back four. I'm going to have to check this later. But, I know what you said, man. I've said it myself, that I don't think he's... That lingering thing of he's... inability to be too adventurous is always going to be there, regardless of what you do and how much you spend and what the players you've got in your squad, and that's just who he is.
And I think it would be interesting to see how he approaches it. If he actually has a bench that he can turn around and think, yeah, I've got A, B, and C here who could change stuff, where, you know, by his own philosophy, he just likes to have a very small. Practically like he's 11, and that's it. Maybe one, just two options off the bench almost, it seems. But I'd like to see how he would do if he has multiple credible options off a bench. Admittedly, you know, history tells us that this is not his strongest point, using subs to change a game. And we've all got the examples that we can point to back that up, obviously. But I'd like to see the goalpost moved where he does have a better calibre of options available, and then let's see what he does, and let's see if he does what he does today. Like I say, look, taking off Vitinha, arguably one of the two man of the matches we've got. You know, I would have kept him on, but you know,
who is Traoré staying on the pitch?
Well, exactly, yeah.
Because absolutely. He can score in the last minute at Craven Cottage. You know, it's just one of those things.
Absolutely atrocious.
He was poor.
He was by far our worst player.
Going back to the point, though, about what could Nuno have done to keep us ahead in that game? And you're not going to like the answer, but I think really the only thing that he could have done to keep us from stopping crosses, getting into the box, etc. Because that's all they were doing. They weren't playing through us and breaking us down. It's getting the ball wide and putting balls in. That would have been to go back to a back five. Not one Wolves fan I know would have wanted to see that.
No, because we know but what would have happened.
That we'd have had a better chance of keeping a clean sheet.
Theoretically, you know, that in theory, that's what you think would happen. But as last week's shown, it doesn't, you know, there's a potential for spanner in the works. But I get the theory of it. I get the theory behind it.
6 months ago, then, yeah. 6 months ago, yeah. But not
this
now.
This is the thing. We're playing the team like West Brom, who, you know, it's very much a scattergun approach, isn't it? You know, you sling enough shit, some of it's going to stick. They put enough balls in the box, one of them's going to land in a position that you don't want it to, and that's at the striker's head or feet or whatever. And that's what's happened. We got away with a couple today, but we just don't have the individuals. No, I'll tell you who we needed at the back when the crosses were coming in was probably Semi Ajayi and freaking Carl Bartley, because that'd have headed everything away. But they couldn't deal with the other stuff, the little movements around the box, you know, and that's, you know, that's just what we've got at the moment as a squad, and that comes back to the recruitment and all that kind of stuff. So it's a bigger issue than today, I think.
Okay.
Going back to the point about, because we're on the negative side, obviously, aren't we? And going back to Adama, it's obviously an accepted fact that he was probably our worst player today. Very frustrating, just kept giving the ball away. We're coming up to a bit of a weird crossroads with him at the minute, because as far as I'm aware, there's still a contract dispute with him at the moment. I'm not sure what's happening to his value, you know, both to Wolves as a team and then also his monetary value. But I'm not quite sure which way it's going to go with him at the minute, based on his performances this season as a whole. And, you know, as a purely as a statistical point of view, he's gone backwards from last year. Mm. So,
today he's ruined Ait Nouri's game. The amount of times he overlapped and he was in prime position to do something, and he fucked it up by being selfish over and over again.
This is where Adama is not a combination player. He's been drilled into him. When you get the ball, you go and take on every man that you see in front of you. And that's how he's played his whole career. You know, he's never been taught almost probably how to play with, you know, an overlapping fullback and whatnot.
Which is now, I think, I think that we know where in the crossroads he needs to be the one to drive off to the left in the Paul Walker way. And just to be gone, because if we're being honest, eight months in 3 years, really, of him being the top player. It's not, I mean, this season's been a shambles for a lot of them, but there's patience and there's none now. And they've tried him on the left to make him be not as terrible. It worked for a while. And then he had to resort to the other side, and then that had the detrimental effect on Neto as well. And Pedence, having no competition with Pedence being God knows what happened to him as well, probably doesn't help. But at the same time, if we are going to move into a different way of playing, like everyone says we are next season, he can't be playing because he's not a team player, like Gully said. He's not a team player.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to talk about Traoré and Pedence in the second half. And we're going to talk about Brighton. So, Gully, your boy, we're going to get a chance to talk about your boy, Potter. And
yes.
Shu, it's an opportunity for you to lower your heart rate before it gets up too high. So we're going to be back shortly, and we're going to have a quick break.
Hi, Richard here. Before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, and of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com. Please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. There's basically nothing they can't do marketing wise, so make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wolves Fancast. Looking ahead now to the game against Brighton. Got to be my least looked forward to game in a season ever. I think it's for them, a lot of people, it was the last home game they'd have been to, I believe. If they didn't go to... No, it would have been the last home game, I think.
Yeah, it was.
And it just brings dour memories, really. The memory of some bloke literally falling asleep and kept banging his head into me. When I was, and I don't think it was because of the football, even though it was abysmal. But
he missed an Yves Bissouma masterclass then.
Well, here we go. So first of all, lineup wise, I think a couple of players have already put their name on the team sheet. Bearing in mind we've got very little left to play for, what do you think from a lineup wise? Who has to start for you now going forward, Pricey?
King Kilman.
Well, I knew he might be injured.
Oh, God, don't say that. honestly, I would largely keep it the same. And why wouldn't you? To be honest, I mean, we've had a positive performance against one Albion. Let's take it over to another Albion. I mean, we want to see more of Otisseri, keep him in. We want to see more of Vitinha, keep him in. Fabio's got his groove back now, so keep him in. If Aitnor is fit, which hopefully he is, I would just change Sace. I mean, this is dependent on, you know, the condition of Bolly, but if we think that he's still out, I'd bring in Kilman for Sace personally. Other than that, what else would you change it? Well, I mean, why would you bring anyone in? I don't really see the point of it.
Stu, what would you be doing for the game? Is there anybody that has staked their claim has to start for you, or is there any surprises that you expect, or do we return back to form if a few of the more senior players are available to us?
That's the problem, mate. As soon as Matinho gets his latest drip sorted out and he's back on the pitch again, and you can just see it happening though, even after today. That's the first. If he does that, then it's not even start. But I mean, for me, you can't really change anything apart from King Kilman, really, because it was for the vast majority of the game, it was a good performance. Mm-hmm. And if you've been really pedantic and say, but play Otisseri in his actual proper position next to Neves in the middle and bring Kolbeinn in, and let's really rev it up. But that's not going to happen. So,
no.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, exactly. It's too exciting. I'm getting myself all sweaty now. But Nuno's never going to go for that. It's madness. But yeah, that's what I'd do. But no. If one of the others is fit, they'll play and the kids will be back on the bench. Mm-hmm. That's what I expect.
Potentially. Gully, you've sacrificed all of this season to scout Graham Potter and Brighton all season. Tell me, what are you expecting from them going into this game, and how do you think the game will pan out?
It's difficult to know what to expect with Brighton, to be honest. They are the only reason they're not a top half team from what I've seen of them is Neil Mopai. he should be bagging about 20 goals a season in that team, and it is ridiculous how they don't win more games than they have. You know, I'll say this about any manager. You know, the only thing stopping managers, you know, that are coaching so well, you know, is players not necessarily putting chances away, and that's the only thing that Graham Potter's been a victim of this season. I think he's done a really, really good job with them, and to be honest, if we go in with the back four, I can see us getting outplayed. You know, a lot of chances created against us. But I also don't really want to see the team change. And I want to give everybody who played today the opportunity to embed, you know, what was good today a little bit more, because there were some nice little link-ups and combinations. And I just think, in terms of putting your eggs in baskets, you shouldn't, you know, Matinho as a player, you know, he's not the future of the football club. No. People like William Jose, not the future of the football club. You got to be doing it for Silva's benefit, for Vitinha's benefit. Hopefully, Aitnuri's fit, having gone off injured today. So these are the guys that are going to really benefit from those minutes on the pitch. You know, the idea of Corbiani, Stu, having watched him for the 23s, he's amazing. Electric. He's electric. He just seems to have a bit of a odd relationship with Nuno, where I think Nuno thinks he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, doesn't he, from what he said about
the interviews and stuff like that, yeah.
But Nuno likes a you know, clean cut good boy, doesn't he? He likes his Ruben Neveses and the like, who are going to be, you know, little puppy dogs really to carry out his plan. So
maybe it's like a North American thing, and he just doesn't get them, because we had all this whole thing about Otasewi as well, and it's saying he's got an attitude problem. Maybe he just doesn't understand them. Maybe it's just not obviously literally, but the way they are, the way they hold themselves, maybe they just rub him off. Some people.
I hope they're not rubbing him off.
Yeah, exactly.
Steady ship.
I mean, Dan's been rubbing off Nuno all year. He's put everything, and but maybe that's just what it is. It's just a personality clash, and the cultures are so different that they just don't get each other.
You think there's a geopolitical problem?
Yeah, exactly.
There.
Yeah,
I see. I understand. I mean, from a predictions point of view, I just want it not to be a 0-0 ball draw, but I also don't want us to see us concede, go up 2 or 3 and then concede them all, and then we have the same conversations that we seem to always have, where it's, well, Nuno made a negative change and then we started to concede and the pressure piled on there, because that tends to happen in these games. Well, let's get let's put to your predictions in. Give me a score prediction, Price.
Well, funny you mention that. I've just been looking at Wolves v Brighton head-to-heads, and it makes particularly grim reading.
Come on, then. Hit me up.
Do you know what? I'm going to go with the what seems to be the favourite Wolves Brighton scoreline of 0-0.
Oh dear, oh dearie me.
Go ahead. It's because I just remember it's always terrible. So 0-0.
Shite, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, the last game was definitely a turn away from that. So I'm going for goals. To be fair, I'm going for a 2-2.
And can we also get Gully's prediction on what the XG for both teams will be as well?
Brighton will clock up like 7.24, probably get 0.6, but still manage to score two real dodgy goals. I'd love to see the XG for Fabio Silva's goal today.
Jay, what about yourself?
I think it's that they're not really Brighton of old, are they? They're not the kind of Chris Hughton shitty Brighton anymore. Everyone should take the piss out of Gully for it. They are fun to watch, but I mean, I think it was Adrian Clarke on the Totally Show today said that if they had Ollie Watkins playing from, they could be seventh or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it really wouldn't surprise me if Neil Mopay turns into Ronaldinho this weekend, like we did to Chris Wood last week. Yeah, I'm going to get goals as well. Fuck it, why not? 3-3 again.
Wow, Christ, where's this come from? I'm going to go for a 1-1 dare affair. Ball going in. Basically, Fabio's going to hit it from 45 yards and the wind takes it all the way in, and he just has this thing about being the luckiest goal scorer in Wolves colours in history.
Aren't we on the BBC graveyard shift as well this weekend?
Oh, no. Say it ain't so.
God. Sunday, 12 o'clock, innit?
Yeah.
I'll be going to the National Trust in that case. No, I won't. Right, so obviously there's no Twitter corner this week because of the social media blackout that the majority of high-profile Twitter accounts have been adhering to, including some of the major TV outlets and all sorts. So we're going to have a very quick conversation about that before we wrap up. Obviously, it's a massively, massively important issue, and the reasons why football teams and other outlets have been doing the blackout is obvious. We don't need to go into why they're doing it, but how important is it for you guys that, you know, these companies and these accounts are doing this? And do you think it shows enough of a message to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram for them to make real change? Anybody want to step up to the plate on this one?
I mean, you don't show them a message. It hits them where it hurts, and that's the wallets.
In the pockets, yeah.
Because that's a whole weekend's worth of ad money pissed away because they can't sort themselves out. And all it takes, Use a passport, driving license, whatever you've got, citizen card, whatever you've got. You have to put your details in. If you ain't got one, you can't come and play. Simple. Game over. Job done. Fuck it off. But, I mean, we're always going to do it, and everyone, every blue tick company or fan group has done the same and not venturing onto Twitter or Insta or Facebook whatsoever. I mean, some people have been retweeting stuff, which is, it's shameful, to be honest. And everyone's done it, apart from certain people. And you should be utterly ashamed of yourselves. Next.
I think you should probably just leave it there.
Well, I mean, there is a responsibility for these massive accounts, and there's a responsibility for everybody, because you have to lead by example in these things. But you are right, the only way that you can get to these companies is by attacking them where it hurts, and that's in their pockets. Will it be enough?
Well, I mean, I think we've only got to look at our own Twitter world of Wolverhampton Wanderers fans, you know, to see that, you know, abuse happens in many forms. It's not necessarily, you know, someone sending a DM to a professional footballer, you know, that is the problem. You know, as much as it's obviously a very high profile version of the problem, people are throwing shade at people every single day on Twitter, you know, in many, many forms, whether it be to do with their, you know, sexual orientation, their race, you know, their viewpoint on who should be frigging starting a football match. You know, this is like how serious this is, like this, you know, when you think about it. And you know, Stu's, yeah, called out people for, you know, maybe not adhering to the blackout. But that void of tweets, you know, that's just filled by other people going at each other on frigging Wolves Twitter these days. And I'm not being funny. We can all practice the, you know, the high profile stuff and the media blackout and stuff like that. But there's a whole lot of shit going on, you know, football Twitter that is just totally unacceptable. And all we're here to do is debate football. You know, that's the long and short of it. It's a very simple, very unserious thing that we're doing here. And it doesn't warrant the level of abuse that people will stop. And that's, you know, something that we all need to take on board.
I mean, it's not just football Twitter, though, is it? It's every kind of subgenre of Twitter you can possibly imagine. I mean, gamer Twitter's worse than football Twitter. I mean, that's where the real cesspits live. And it's, I mean, it's just, I mean, you probably got car phone wearers versus one-to-one if you're going back to the 90s, if Twitter existed then.
It's Curry's versus Dixon's.
Yeah. The Lloyd's versus, oh, I forgot it. But yeah, it's the same thing. As long as you've got an opposite opinion from someone else, have it out. I mean, I've always said on with my personal Twitter, and I follow people who I don't agree with on a lot of things because it's healthy. If you only follow people, or you only talk to people who've got the same opinion as you, what are you going to learn? It's just you're living in your own bubble,
Stu, though, that, you know, we can all do that, but people are just overstepping the mark.
Yeah,
and every single day.
So I think is that people wake up people actively go looking for it, don't they? Actively go looking for the confrontation, and it doesn't even require people to have their burn accounts or whatever, or the bot accounts. People will be themselves, but then also just be quite happy to throw shit anywhere, just as like a way to pass 10 minutes. What can I say to this person right now, or what can I just say to this? People just do it with reckless abandon, really, because there's no, what is the comeback for it, really? I mean, unless you do something massively, massively severe, you might get a knock from the old Bill, but other than that, what are you going to do? Just get your account suspended. Okay, well, I'll make another one.
Yeah.
Well, there's no real comeback, and that's really why
You can't blame social media companies for that. That's just human beings being fucking twats.
Well, exactly. And, you know, obviously ID would be great, but can you really see these companies agreeing to do that? Because that will ultimately hit them in their pockets, won't it, really? If you take, you give them one account only, and it's you, and if you're on the naughty list, you'll never be allowed to come back on the platform again. That'll ultimately hit them in the wallet. So they'll keep the can down the road, saying, yeah, we're looking into what we can do X, Y, Z. But ultimately, they won't. Sadly, they won't ever do anything about it.
If it's not on them, then you kick it higher and make it government and make it law.
It has to be regulatory. And we've seen that with the ESL, the Super League stuff. You know, when people kick up enough of a fuss and shit hits the fan to a level that it did, you know, they're bringing in the, you know, regulations that are going to prevent something from happening. So I hope it doesn't get to a stage where it's, you know, that level of seriousness. But that's the only way to really manage people, it seems.
I mean, you have got to, there's the line as well, where there's the line with being a wind-up merchant and trying to have a bit of a laugh to going way too far. And the vast majority of people, because you'll always get people who just can't take a joke, however innocent it is. Yeah. And they will get reported. So you have got to have the line of, well, yeah, obviously, if you're putting yourself out there, then you are going to get some blowback from me. But as long as it's on that, as long as it doesn't get abusive and personal, then fine. Just behave yourselves. It's like...
I think the overriding factor is it's abundantly clear that social media companies have a responsibility, and at the moment they aren't taking their share of that responsibility, and they need to do more. And I hope this blackout has shown that if things don't change, this will just happen more. You know, peaceful protests do work, and things can change, but companies have to understand that they have a responsibility as well. And let's just hope that through the effort of the majority, you know, these things happen, because it's for the better of everybody. It's for the better of the players, better for mental health, better for the reputation of the game. It's just better for everybody if these things are squashed as soon as physically possible. But it's probably one for a separate show altogether, really. We'll kind of wrap it up there for now. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Make sure you are subscribed to us on our social media platforms post blackout, so you can get all of our content as soon as it arrives. Make sure you subscribe with your notifications on, including our YouTube channel, to get all of our content as soon as it lands. Cheers, guys, for coming on as usual. Looking forward to the next game, and hopefully we can see another result for the good guys and see the young kids stamp their names on the fixture lists going forward. But for now, Gully, if you want to say goodbye.
Shit on the baggies.
Shit on the baggies. Price.
Take care, guys. See you later.
And Stu.
At least they'll be down next week.
Ta-ra. Exactly. Take it easy, guys. Look after yourself.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a new season we recommend.
I'm Sam Bungie, one of the hosts of West Cork, a story about a community on the far south coast of Ireland that became a kind of paradise for people looking for a fresh start.
And nobody knew their past. You could be who you wanted to be, rather than who you really were.
Then one newcomer was murdered and another was suspected of doing it.
I see him in the market, and really, he's always trying to be normal and trying to get people to like him. But we all know, don't we?
Listen to West Cork now on Acast.
Acast recommends.